This is KHUM, Radio Without the Rules. We're joined here in the studio by Peter Blackley and company, and it is prestigious company, to say the least. This band is playing tonight at the Eagle House. There's going to be some photography. You definitely want to go to the Eagle House. But let's start off, Peter Blackley, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Let's start off with a song.
Hard against my old worn clothes, and the sagebrush smells so sweet this time of year. I've just come from that city where I don't want to be. Jeremia, take me back where I belong, to the big Nevada sky, where the mountains reach so high and the rivers never seem to run dry. From Elko down to Ely, where the Mustangs run so free, you're alone but you're not lonely anymore. Made myself a promise a long time ago. When it came my time, my friends would bring me back to lay among pine trees in the mountain top, where a cowboy feels he's always going home. To the big Nevada sky, where the mountains reach so high and the rivers never seem to run dry. From Elko down to Ely, where the Mustangs run so free, you're alone but you're not lonely. Big Nevada sky, where the mountains reach so high and the rivers never seem to run dry. From Elko down to Ely, where the Mustangs run so free, you're alone but you're not lonely. You're alone but you're not lonely anymore.
Blackley is here. I am saying that right, yeah?
Blatchley.
Blatchley.
Yeah, the K is silent.
First of all, let's introduce your motley crew of musicians and ne'er-do-wells.
Well, I got the greatest on this trip. I got the best guys in the world. I have the gentleman who we just heard, Michael Norton. My boy over there, Ryan Rice, he is on vocals. Here we have the great Henry Diltz with us today on banjo and vocals as well.
Henry Diltz, you're very famous.
Well, my name is famous.
How do you explain to people, like, what you do?
I do album covers, take rock and roll pictures, Morrison Hotel, Sweet Baby James, Eagles Desperado, and so on, you know, a couple hundred.
Yeah, and you're also a banjo player.
Yeah.
With a modern folk quartet.
That is correct.
And a clarinet player and a harmonica player.
A little bit. I dabble.
Yeah, versed in many, yes, in many instruments.
Right.
Yeah.
Peter Blatchley. Your career arc, which brings you to the Eagle House tonight, started in the record industry. Is that where it started?
Yeah, years ago I needed a job, and I was about 25 years old. And I called Capitol Records, And I said, are you hiring? And they said, yes, we are. What do you do? I wasn't prepared for what do you do. I hadn't even thought it through that far. I just knew I wanted to work for a record company. And they said, we just happen to have an opening. Come down tomorrow. So I started in the mailroom at Capitol Records in 1977 and worked my way up into marketing. And then I was head of production and marketing for the video division in 1980 when we were doing Duran Duran and George Thorogood's Bad to the Bone, which I produced, and I'm in that video behind Willie Moscone and Bo Diddley. And we did Stray Cats, Rock This Town, and on and on and on. We had years of fun times.
So when a Capitol artist wanted to make a rock video in 1981, you are the guy who signed off on the budget and the pyro and these sorts of things?
Yeah, the pyro and the budget, the video chicks, man, all that stuff that they had in those days, which, you know, I love doing videos because, you know, in those days you could kind of invent what it was that you really saw in the song. But the real heroes in the early videos were the editors. And we had a lot of editors, mainly from England, interestingly enough. The English editors were a little more advanced than the Americans. And they would create some really mind-blowing videos based on, you know, what they saw. The Duran Duran videos were the first ones that we did. And those built the band. They broke the band. It wasn't music. It was their videos that made them happen. And so we, you know, we try to do that with a lot of bands in those days.
What are some other videos that your perhaps invisible fingerprints might be on?
Well, like I say, I mean, George Thorogood's Bad to the Bone. I worked on the Tina Turner, some of the Tina Turner videos, the Private Dancer albums and that stuff that we did. I did a lot of long form. I did the Tubes video. I did David Bowie Glass Spider tour I worked on, and I did John Lennon's Live in New York City project as well. So, yeah, a number of things. No, I mean, everybody, you know, I'm glad I was in the music business then. I see a big difference today in the way music is made. Not that the musicians today and the talent today isn't as good as it ever was. There's just not the the mechanism that they can really become something more in terms of their craft than what we have today.
What do you mean by the mechanism is not there?
It's called the business model. The business model for a record, for a recording artist back then, was that if it was decided by a jury of your peers, and that was other artists, management, record label people, people who knew what they wanted in a sound and knew that your sound was unique and you had your own style, like Miles Davis would say. You had to have your own style. It had to be unique. And if they saw that, they would sign you to a record contract. It was called an option period. They would give you four albums that you knew you would do. So the whole thing worked in your favor. I always explain this. It was like a comet with a short, fat tail. And that comet in that short, fat tail was everything you needed to succeed. You would reach a lot of people. Today, it's like a comet with a long, thin tail. You know, anybody can make an album. Anybody can put it up on Facebook or YouTube or whatever. But that tail is long and it's thin. So you don't get the kind of attention. You never will get the sort of ability, you know, to become the Bob Dylan today. The great music doesn't have a chance to really, you know, to really rise to the top.
Let's turn our attention over here. You had made reference to Mr. Henry Diltz.
Absolutely.
He is over here on the left on the Good Time Banjo. Let me put this microphone close to your face.
Okay.
Microphones, Mr. Diltz, to use a comparison that you would understand, it is like a camera.
Yes.
Of sound.
It's the lens.
Yeah. Oh, you're still out of focus, though. Speak up a little
speak
bit.
Speak into the lens. There we are.
Let me ask you this, because you've taken all these crazy photos. You've worked with
The Laurel Canyon singer-songwriter, late 60s, early 70s. You know, Jackson Browne, Jimmy Webb. Neil Young, James Taylor, Joni Mitchell, you know, Mamas and the Papas, the Turtles.
Jimi Hendrix,
yeah.
Like, not only have you seen these people live, yeah, but you have taken photographs of them very up close.
Yeah, and gone on tour with them and hung out with them, you know, and on buses and planes and hotel rooms and backstage, dressing rooms.
That must have been okay.
All that kind of... Yeah, it was good.
I'm sure there are no good stories from that area.
And you know what? I got to do that because, first of all, I was a musician and I wasn't a pushy photographer. I was a guy that they kind of recognized. I had a camera, you know. And musicians learn how to hang out. Sometimes photographers don't. You know, they're anxious to get the picture. I'm not. You know, I'll hang out. I'll hang out all evening, all day, whatever, you know. I mean, even shooting on videos. I used to shoot on a lot of Peter's videos. My peers, the other rock photographers, they would jump in there at lunchtime and they want to get their shot with the director and the star and then go on to something else. I was there for 8 hours, 10 hours. I loved hanging out. And during those later hours, I would get these magic shots, you know. And so it's knowing how to hang out. I mean, I can hang out backstage for hours. You know, I'm not pushy about, you know.
Let's couch this differently.
Okay.
You made money and a real career out of chilling.
Yes, because during that chilling period would be these wonderful moments that I could very quietly push the button and preserve.
Right.
You know, in a quiet sort of a documentary way. I sometimes say, I think of myself as the Jane Goodall of rock photography, because she would sit there with a pad and pencil and watch the chimps, but she wouldn't want to interact with them because it would change the behavior. Well, it's the same with me, you know. If I walk into the Red Hot Chili Peppers dressing room, first of all, I walk in, everything stops, they look at me, who's that guy, you know. So I don't take a picture, I don't even show my camera, I sit down on the couch quietly. 5 minutes later, everybody's doing what they're doing, and then I can very quietly take a picture of what's really going on.
Your cover photos, like, you know, let's name, you, we already talked about Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Your photos have also been on the cover of whose albums?
The Eagles. I did 6 or 7 America covers, The Doors, you know, The Turtles, The Byrds, the Jackson Brown, James Taylor. That was MacArthur Park, Jimmy Webb.
Jimmy Webb.
One of my favorite songwriters is Jimmy Webb. I did several of his covers.
So today, where I have, you know, 40 albums on my phone and no cover art.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
It's a lost art form. Back in those days, you had the 12-inch square. And that was your palette, you know, that you could make this fantastic picture, you know, that would people would see that. Wow, look at that cover. You know, that looks great. I got it. So, but now it's shrunk down to that little, you know, what is it, a 4-inch square or something. And you don't have, we've lost that art form. Although people do recognize it as an art form and collect them. And a lot of groups now are putting out vinyl.
Henry and I are partners in the Morrison Hotel Gallery, one of the biggest fine art music photography galleries in the world. We're in New York, we're in Los Angeles, and we make a very good living out of people buying and collecting these amazing photographs.
One other person who's in the room who we have not addressed. We've got Susan Brandt back there.
Lovely Susan Brandt. I'll tell you why she's here. Number one,
she's a groupie.
She's my fiance. So.
Look, I understand that you were an EMI dude, and I understand that you hung out with Jim Morrison, but she founded Rational Animal, and I got you
pretty
saw
impressive.
Me. I got starstruck.
That's pretty impressive.
I asked her, I was like, oh, I saw you work with Rational Animal. What do you do for them? She's like, I founded it. I was like, Which is a great group that works with rock musicians. They buy dog beds for animal shelters. It's a great group. Google Rational Animal, and then the first thing you're going to see is like a picture of Mike D from the Beastie Boys. So we've got a very eclectic bunch in the room right now, and they will be showing photographs and playing musical songs tonight at the Eagle House. So let's do another musical song.
This song is called, written by a photographer who used to be in the Kingston Trio.
Not a photographer.
Excuse me, a musician.
Yes.
I was looking over at you, Henry.
Yes.
I was thinking photographer. Yes. A very, very capable musician. His name is John Stewart, and the song is California Bloodlines.
I've been born in New York City, a New York City girl I might have known. Working the sunlight, not this high tide. Living in that New York rain and snow. Well, there's California bloodlines in my heart. California woman in my song. Well, there's California bloodlines in my heart, and a California heartbeat in my soul. Well, I could never really happen if I had lived my life in Tennessee. But I could never let that happen. You and California are in me. Well, there's California bloodlines in my heart. In my soul. Well, have you ever seen sunrise? The western sky so blue. Well, it's then that I saw the High Sierra. Saw it coming out of you. Well, there's California bloodlines in my heart. And a California woman in my song. Well, there's California bloodlines in my heart. And California heartbeat in my soul.
Playing tonight at the Eagle House. This is obviously in Eureka. It is a cool room. We got to take a quick break. We're going to come back and ask about the music business in the 80s and the 60s and maybe some cocaine jokes. I don't know. It's K-Hum Radio. Stay with us. It's K-Hum Radio. We are back in the studio. Peter Blatchley is with us and his band, which includes Henry Dilt. Peter Blatchley, a fantastic dude. And also has very interesting stories about making music videos in the early 80s. Also, we've got Henry Diltz over here who made rock photography happen in the 60s and 70s, and I guess 80s as well. Let me ask you a couple of other questions. Like, how much cocaine does it take to get George Thorogood on MTV? Oh. Did you send them cocaine, or do you just back up a truck and, like, dump it out, or...
Actually, it wasn't cocaine. Haitian hookers. Yeah, believe it or not. Believe it or not. Believe it or not. Remember, remember J.J. Jackson? Oh, you couldn't stop that guy. It was unbelievable.
Haitian hookers.
I offered him coke, but no, he had to have the Haitian hookers. He was...
No kidding.
He was there, yeah. Yeah. Oh, I know. I can tell you a story. When I first got to Hollywood, I was a carpenter. I had a carpentry skill, and I worked on a porno set. And we had to build all these, accoutrements in the set of this porno movie. But I left that job rather quickly and went into a rehearsal studio called Studio Instrument Reynolds. And we had sound stages in there. And I remember one day I was just a lowly carpenter. I was working in there. I was walking through. And these girls were in the pool room. And as I walked through, they would play this game to, like, throw their high heel shoes off and to hit me in the head with them. You know, those shoes were flying across the room. And I'm going, what mean girls these are, you know? Who are these girls? Well, it was the Runaways, you know? Yeah, see, he's about to throw a shoe at me right now.
You know, honestly, the only thing stopping me from throwing my shoe at you is that you have a 1971 Gibson.
That's true. And you're related to Nikita Khrushchev somewhere way back in your family.
Oh, my God. You just went Khrushchev on me?
Khrushchev.
Come on.
The shoe on the desk.
What is this?
The Russians love their children.
So Henry Diltz is here, and you hung out, like, in one of the, at least for me, like, the richest areas in time musically, which is the Topanga Canyon, that scene.
Laurel Canyon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Why that area? Why that sound? What was the alchemy that created the California country sound?
Well, it was folk music was huge in the late 50s, early 60s, the Kingston Trio, right? And all the folk groups. And there were coffee houses where you could sit and play, and anybody could pick up a guitar and go sing in a coffee house and learn how. All the colleges loved folk concerts. I mean, the Modern Folk Quartet, you know, made a living for 4 years just doing folk clubs and college concerts all across the country. And then when the Beatles played Ed Sullivan in 1964, all the folk groups watched that and ran out and got electric instruments. We watched that. We pulled into a motel that night and said, we've heard about these guys, but I've never really seen them, never. And we said, wow, look at that. I mean, that joyful music. You know, what are we singing about ox drivers for? We want to do that kind of. And we traded our stand-up bass on an electric bass. I electrified my banjo. And then you had the Byrds, the Buffalo Springfield. Those were folk rock. They were electrified folk groups, you know. And the other thing was, before that, there were the songwriters and there were the singers. You know, Frank Sinatra never wrote any songs. Elvis Presley never wrote any songs. The songwriters wrote the songs and the singers sang them. But because of the Beatles' influence and Bob Dylan, who kind of learned from Woody Guthrie, people started writing their own music. And now they're not only singing a great song, but it's their own feeling, their own message. You know, and so with Crosby, Stills, Nash, you know, Paul Simon, James Taylor, Joni Mitchell, Stephen Stills, Neil Young, all those, that was a sea change, you know. I mean, I once asked Jackson Brown, I was talking to him on the phone, I said, Jackson, what, when people ask you, why was the 60s so great? You know, what do you say? He said, well, it was because it was new. It was a brand new thing, you know, that people were, I mean, it was just so creative to be writing your own songs and singing your own songs and expressing yourself in that way. That's not only just the music and the words, it was the ideas behind it. And that was Bob Dylan and the Beatles. And so it was this, the change from folk music to electrified folk music to singer-songwriters. That was the big sea change.
Did he tell you that, or did he text that to you?
He told me on the phone.
Facebook.
I was in the airport. I called
on
him.
On the phone.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Can I get Jackson Brown's number?
Yeah.
True or false, music on the whole is better today than it has ever been.
I would say that music, the musicians today are as good as they've ever been. I think we still have wonderful musicians, and I think we'll still have wonderful writers and people expressing their art. However, the difference today and in our day was that we wanted a world that was positive. We wanted things to uplift us and to make us feel better about, you know, who we were and what we were trying to achieve. I don't get that today. I think it's a little bit more narcissistic today. I think the narcissistic tendencies are kind of overriding the good music and not allowing the good music to come out. But, you know, look, every generation finds their own level, and I think this generation will find it.
Hold on, I'll take a selfie.
Yeah.
I think the good music was back when it was Bach and Mozart and Vivaldi. Now that was some good music.
Sorry,
you know.
Jackson Brown.
Yeah.
Right.
But you know,
right, a cantata.
Yeah, you know, Jackson is amazing, you know, and so is Jimmy Webb, and they have been since the 60s, you know. But there hadn't been another Beatles really.
Oh my God! I almost forgot. Yeah. Look, Henry Diltz. Yes, you've had. Yes, Zappa. You've worked with Jackson Brown. Dude, you were in a glider accident.
With Jimmy Webb.
With Jimmy Webb!
Yeah, we crashed the glider.
You crashed a glider?
Yes.
Jimmy Webb's like, hey, come in my glider, shoot some photos.
Yeah,
you're like, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
What happened?
It was an accident, of course, you know.
Oh, like Jimmy Webb's trying to kill you?
We were out in the desert in Pear Blossom, and we were trying to... I'd done a picture of him for an album cover in the glider, and I'd shot some Super 8 film, which we looked at, and it was great. We said, well, let's go back out there with... 35mm, a real movie camera. And so in order to get something exciting, instead of staying right over the desert where you had the heat rising, we went up the side of the mountain. Well, that would have been okay, but we went back into the mountain so we could get a nice run down the side of the mountain and out onto the desert. Well, when we got back in the mountains, there was a kind of a downdraft which sucked us down into a ring of mountains. And we kind of flew in a circle, and we were lower than the pass to get out. You know what I mean?
Totally.
There was no,
yeah.
And there's no engine.
You're sort of circling the drain at this
point.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it was pulling us down. And he said, Henry, we're in trouble. We're going down. there was nothing but they were trees. It was snow, pine trees, and mountainsides. There was no flat area on the bottom. And so his instructor had taught him, if you ever get caught where you have to crash into the trees, fly, take both wings off at the same time. Go through two trees where you can pull both wings off, because if you hit one wing, you're going to spin around, and that'll kill you.
That's grotesquely rational, though.
I know it. So he did. He headed for two pine trees, took both wings off, and we woke up a few minutes later in this glider with our tail up in a tree. It's suddenly very quiet, right? And I'm in the front of the glider, and then Jimmy's in behind. I said, Henry, are you okay? You know, I said, yeah. You know, he said, you know, have you got a joint?
Get out of there! Hold on! Seriously?
Yeah, we got out, and we sat on a big boulder and lit up a doobie, and oh, man, that was the best toke, you know. Yes. Well, we needed to, you know, relax, right? And then, later that day, the helicopter came up and came and got us.
Let's rebuild this scenario through an objective lens. Okay, so we make a tactical misstep. We go into a valley. There's a downdraft. We realize times are about to get very grim.
Yes.
We remember our flight instructor's instructions. Have both wings severed at the same time. So right. That happens. Crash land. Pass out. Wake up 3 minutes later.
Yeah.
Let's party. That's how it went down?
That was the sequence of events.
And
yes.
Then it's like you're high with a wingless glider in the snow in the middle of nowhere. It's like, oh, dude, right.
We weren't
here.
Having a party, you know. We
it's
were
kind
just
of a party,
you know,
a little bit. We're embracing life.
We needed to eat, relax, embracing life. Yes, yeah. Peter. Good
one. The high
good
was higher because.
Do you have any better stories than that? Because that's pretty hard to beat. Getting high after a glider crash?
Let's see. I stubbed my toe this morning.
Nope. All right. Well, look, we're gonna wrap it up with a song. We've been talking with Henry Diltz, whose photography you can see tonight at the Eagle House. We've also got Peter Blatchley. He writes songs. He got Haitian hookers for people and worked for Capitol Records and hung out with Paul McCartney. But you still didn't crash a glider.
Briefly. No, I didn't crash a glider. No. I'm a toy one I did one time.
Doesn't count.
No.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up. And I want to just thank you guys and send us out with a song.
2, 3, 4.
I can't hold it on the road when you're sitting right beside me and I'm drunk out of my mind merely from the fact that you are here. And I have not been known as the saint of San Joaquin, though I'd just as soon right now pull on over the side. Can't hold my eye on the white line out before me when your hand is on my collar and you're talking in my ear. And I have been around with a gypsy girl named Shannon, daughter of the devil, and it's strange that I should mention her to you. I haven't thought of her in years. Na 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 na. Na 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 na. Shula, you're a woman more than anyone I've ever known.
Okay, Michael Norton. Thank you.
na 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 na. Sheila, you're a woman more than anyone I've ever known, more than anyone that I have ever known. Sheila, you're a woman. Sheila, you're a woman.
Everybody clap.
Ah, right, there we are.
Love it. If you want to heckle yourself, now's the only chance. Guys,
heckle.
This was super fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank all y'all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rational Animal Founder.
Yeah,
you guys, look, I'm sure what you've done is important.
We bow at her feet.
You should.
Yeah.
Rational Animal. Check them out. Rational-animal.org. All right. That's it, right? Rational-animal.org. Well, this has been KHUM Radio Without the Rules. You can see these people tonight and ask them all kinds of questions about anything, because clearly they will answer them with surprising and perhaps dangerous honesty.
We do a live here. We'll be out of town before.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Well, that's going to do it.